Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The 2020 runoff is finally over. It was supposed to happen back on May 26, but it was delayed due to the outbreak of coronavirus. But now we have the candidates who will be on the general election ballot on November the 3rd. But there's still some uncertainty due to close races and mail-in absentee ballots that could still trickle in. To help us break down the results that we do know, we're joined by Express News Metro columnist Gilbert Garcia. And Gilbert, welcome back to The Source.
Thank you.
So let's talk about something that's been totally settled. We do know how the Bexar County party chairs has worked out. And this is something that people have paid a lot of attention to. You don't normally pay a lot of attention to who your party chair is, but certainly there's been a lot of excitement generated by the personalities in these races, and particularly in the Republican Party chair. How did that wash out?
Well, you had Cynthia Brehm, who had been a really divisive figure in the Republican Party. She'd only served 2 years, but she had had a history of getting into, major conflicts with other members of the party. And just in the last couple of months, she had a press conference where she suggested that the COVID-19 pandemic had been promulgated by Democrats to make President Trump look bad. Then she later put out a tweet, which she ultimately deleted, but a tweet that put out the theory that the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis by a police officer was a hoax that had been staged to also make the president look bad. So at that point, when that second theory came out, you started to see major figures in the Republican Party in Texas, including Governor Greg Abbott and Ted Cruz and John Cornyn, call for her to resign, which she rejected those calls. But she had become, she still had her loyalists within the local party organization, but a very divisive figure. And she lost by a big margin in this runoff. She lost by about 2-1 to a man named John Austin, who is a real estate appraiser and a very different figure. He's very conservative, as she is, but he's much more low-key figure, self-effacing, and has emphasized the need to just sort of bring the party together. And I don't think he's going to be someone who's going to be out front in front of the cameras and the microphones as much as she has been.
And even prior to Cynthia Brehm's inflammatory tweets and denials of the existence of COVID-19, she was you had written about her personal life, right, and some of the controversies there.
Yeah, she has. She's married to an Army veteran who ran into issues regarding an incident where he exposed himself to Cynthia's daughter, who was in her mid-teens at the time, her daughter from a previous marriage, and he served some time for that while he was in the Army. There were also investigations by the Army also determined that there was the probable cause to believe that there had been other incidents that were even more extreme involving him and children going back to the 80s. She also had an incident late last year where she got into an altercation with another member of the party. And the police were called. The police officer wrote a report saying that Cynthia Brehm was extremely belligerent. So there was just a lot of baggage.
So why does it matter to anyone who cares about local politics that we now have a different Bexar County Republican Party chair? I mean, will this make a difference?
It can. I think particularly for down ballot races. I mean, I think when you look at the people toward the top of the ballot, if you're talking about Senate candidates, congressional candidates, a lot of these candidates tend to be self-sufficient when it comes to fundraising and organization. But you I think the party organization becomes more important when you have down ballot candidates, particularly judicial ones. We saw with Cynthia Brehm in 2018, it was a rough cycle for Republicans in Texas in general, but judicial candidates did very poorly on the Republican side here. And that's, you kind of need to have that, you know, the foot soldiers in the party be willing to get out and just it becomes a turnout game.
Right. So we're seeing how the difference in leadership, local leadership, makes at the Democratic Party as well. Monica Alcantara became the chair, and she faced a challenger, Grace Rose Gonzalez, who was connected to the previous administration, right. Manuel Medina.
Yeah, and this was very much a referendum on the Manuel Medina, you know, his period of leadership. He was he was also a very, you know, divisive leader on the Democratic side, and people will remember that he ran for mayor in 2017. He ran unsuccessfully for mayor, and he was voted out in 2018 as party chair. But he still has an influence over. He brought in a lot of. I think one positive thing that people on the Democratic side would say is that he brought in a lot of new people, and he filled a lot of precinct chair positions that hadn't been filled, and so he still has many loyalists there. This was kind of a referendum on him, and his successor, Monica Alcantara, she won a close race, and I think that it was basically the voters ultimately deciding that they wanted to kind of move away from.
But there were a lot of questions about the way Manuel Medina ran the finances for the local Bexar County Democratic Party and how it flowed. Sometimes you couldn't track where the money was coming and where it was going. And local candidates were very reluctant to actually work with the Bexar County Democratic Party because it was you didn't know what was happening and where the money was going. And so they had to set up their own individual PAC to help themselves. And when Monica became the party chair, they felt that they actually had a local party that they could work with. And the concern was what's going to happen going forward.
Yeah. And you know, because he has a political consulting business, he was working for candidates. Sometimes he worked for Democratic candidates in primary races where these were contested Democratic races. And, often using the party's offices for his own business, things really got commingled in a way that made a lot of people uncomfortable.
And real quickly, we now know who the Democratic candidate will be challenging Senator John Cornyn, a Republican.
Right. We have MJ Hagar, who's an Air Force veteran who ran for Congress a couple of years ago, ran a strong race, but it fell short in 2018, defeated State Senator Royce West. I think MJ Hagar was the favorite all along. You know, you had a very competitive Democratic field in the primary in March, and this was a close race as well. But I think that MJ Hagar was always seen as the likely nominee. And you know, a few months ago, many people would have thought, you know, the point is moot because John Cornyn would have been seen as an overwhelming favorite in the general election. But I think there's, you know, some people are reevaluating that now, and we could have a competitive election. We're seeing all kinds of changes as far as how Democrats are doing in Texas polls.
There's a lot of polling data that shows that this race is not over. It's just starting. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to hear from Becky Clay Flores about her primary victory, her runoff victory, and what that means moving forward for the Bexar County Commissioner's Court. And Gilbert Garcia is going to remain with us for the Express News. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In the next half hour, we're going to be joined by Robert Puente, President and CEO of the San Antonio Water System, to talk about the challenges for SAWS during the COVID pandemic and other issues confronting SAWS. But right now, we're looking at last night's elections, the runoff recap, and we have Gilbert Garcia with us. Also, in a surprise victory to last night, Rebecca Clay Flores unseated a 16-year incumbent on the Bexar County Commissioner's Court with 61% of the vote. If she wins in November, Clay Flores will be the first woman of color ever to sit on Commissioner's Court, and she joins us now. Rebecca Clay Flores, congratulations.
Thank you so much. It's so good to be on the force again. I appreciate it.
So did you get a congratulatory call from Chico Rodriguez?
No, I did not.
Have you heard anything? Did he concede? Or has, I know he never considered you to be an actual candidate or a challenge.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything. But, you know, as we discussed last time, as I was block walking and getting out there and talking to different constituents, a lot of times he wasn't present and didn't return calls. As you know, he didn't show up for the source to discuss things when I was on. So I wasn't expecting to hear from him.
Precinct 1 is a strong Democratic district. However, you will be facing a Republican, Gabriel Lara, who is a retired paramedic. What's your attitude going into that race?
Yeah, so through the campaign, I've had the opportunity to meet Gabriel, and we have developed a very cordial friendship. And so I'm looking forward to campaigning and just furthering our message. And yeah, it's going to be good.
So tell me, if things go according to your plan, and if you are elected, and on January 1st you are sworn in and become a commissioner, Precinct 1 of Bexar County Commissioner's Court, what do you think that would mean?
I think it means that we have better representation after a long drought on Commissioner's Court that's more reflective of San Antonio. Having women, having a Latina, I'm also Black. So I think it's just about time that we have better representation. Someone who's not part of the system, but who isn't afraid to rock the boat and go against the status quo and really be a voice for the community and speak up for change. Looking forward to it.
So you had 61% of the vote in this runoff. That's a decisive
correct
win. What do you think that says?
I'm just really proud of the voters of Precinct 1. They educated themselves on the issues. They did their research. And it says that it's time for a change. It's time that we're not left behind in terms of resources in certain parts of this precinct. And I'm looking forward to serving and being as engaged and as involved in the community as I have been during this campaign.
Well, congratulations again, Rebecca.
Thank you.
Clay Flores, to your nomination for Precinct 1 Bexar County Commissioner's Court. We look forward to hearing from you and also the Republican candidate, Gabriel Lara, and talking to you and helping inform the voters. It's great to talk to you.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. So Gilbert Garcia, with the San Antonio Express News Metro columnist, Chico Rodriguez is definitely not going to be on a commissioner's court come January 1. Is this the end of a political dynasty?
I think so. I think that one of the things that was interesting, and by the way, I think Rebecca Clay Flores' victory was the most stunning result that we saw in the Bexar County runoff Tuesday. But, you know, he had served for 16 years. Sir Rodriguez had been his brother had been a congressman for a long time. And Sir Rodriguez's daughter, Xochitl Peña Rodriguez, lost the state Senate runoff to Roland Gutierrez. And I think that while Roland Gutierrez and Rebecca Clay Flores ran very, you know, their own individual races and dealt with the issues in each, they had their own distinctive issues to talk about. I think that what connected those two campaigns is that both of them talked about the Rodriguez family dynasty or machine, you know, however people want to refer to it. And I think that there was the message was that this family has probably had too much power for too long on the South Side.
And what did they do with that power? I got a clip here from Roland Gutierrez from last night. Let's give it a listen.
I think that we need to have a discussion about what's important for the people of District 19. The real winners are going to be the people along the border, you know, I mean, that have made it very clear they don't need a border wall, and they certainly don't need their senator agreeing with the Trump administration that we do. I think that the children of this district are the real winners, you know. We need to make sure that we plus up money for education. We need to make sure that we get more access to health care. We need to make sure that we do Medicaid expansion. Those are things that Pete Flores absolutely is diametrically opposed to. And we need to make sure that we have advocates for this community, the farmers of Texas, the farmers of District 19, under my plan to legalize cannabis, are going to be the real winners. We can generate $3 billion in that process, and we're going to do so, especially at a time when our budget deficits are going to be devastated come this spring. We've got real challenges, and it's going to require someone with the kind of experience that we've had over the last 12 years to get it done.
And that was Roland Gutierrez last night talking about his runoff win. And Gilbert Garcia, he's not wasting any time. He's stepping right into the ring for the race for against the incumbent, Republican State Senator Pete Flores.
Yes, and this is a race that I think Democrats feel they should win. I think, you know, when you talk to Republicans privately, there's not a lot of optimism that they're going to be able to hang on to that seat. Pete Flores won in a special election in 2018, and we know special elections sometimes, strange things can happen. Given the size of the turnout we're likely to see in this presidential election cycle, things are set up pretty well for Roland Gutierrez to flip that seat.
Trish DeBerry won in the runoff against Tom Rickoff for Bexar County Commissioner's Precinct 3. It was just hard to ignore the track record that Rickoff has in winning elections. But still, she definitely was campaigning hard.
That's right. Well, Tom Rickoff has been, you know, he was, I think, the first Republican in Bexar County to win a countywide race since Reconstruction. This was in 1978, and he's had a lot of success. He lost a race for county judge, a general election race against Nelson Wolf 2 years ago, but he's had nothing but success in Republican contests. And he did have that track record. And Trish DeBerry had the support of the business community. She
right. I'm going to play a track for him. I have a cut from Trish DeBerry. Let's give it a listen.
Okay.
So, you know, I ran on a platform that I really felt like we needed private sector experience and business experience. And having been an entrepreneur for 20 years and scrubbed budgets and looked for opportunities when challenges presented themselves, I think I've got a great skill set to be able to address that. But specifically, I think we've got to take a very close look at city-county consolidation. I know it's a topic that's been talked about for a very long time, you know, but I don't want to just talk the talk. I want to walk the walk. I mean, I think there's no better time than right now to take a look at why do we have two economic development departments. We have bloated budgets. We have staffs associated with both. When you look at public works, we have public works with county, we have public works with the city. Why can't we take a really hard look at city-county consolidation and saving money? I mean, I think that's a very pragmatic approach, and that's what I want to bring to the court.
And so what does that mean that Trish DeBerry was able to knock off Tom Rickoff? And Tom Rickoff was not shy with coming with some of the pro-Trump talking
right.
points.
Well, you know, she had the strong business community support. She raised more than $400,000. I think he raised about $27,000 up to late June. So she had some strong advantages. But I think, you know, I think ultimately the Republican voters looked and thought, this is someone, Trish DeBerry, who's a fiscal conservative, but she's going to be able to work with the rest of the commissioners in a bipartisan fashion and try to get things done. Whereas Tom Rickoff was going to be a really, provocative element there. He was going to be somewhat similar to what we saw with Greg Brockhaus in city council. He was going to go in there and probably lob a lot of accusations at his colleagues, and it was going to be a very different situation. And I think ultimately Republicans decided to go with somebody who was maybe the more pragmatic figure.
House District 23, the Republican nomination is still unsettled. Last check, there's a 7-vote difference between Tony Gonzalez and Raul Reyes, and with Gonzalez ahead.
Yeah, and we're used to close races in general elections there because this is a swing district that tends to go back and forth between Republicans and Democrats. But it's unusual to see it in a primary runoff like this. And it was such a strange dynamic because Raul Reyes depicted himself as the Trump loyalist. He in the race, he defended Trump's border wall. He was very enthusiastic about supporting Trump. But then, most prominent Republican elected officials endorsed Tony Gonzalez because they thought he had the best chance of winning in November. And you had Ted Cruz supporting Raul Reyes, and then Donald Trump ultimately supported Tony Gonzalez. And so it was a very confused situation in that Reyes, the one who said, I'm the Trump candidate, was actually being opposed by Trump in the race. And Gonzalez leads by 7 votes. We're still, domestic mail-in ballots can still be accepted up to 5 p.m. today. International and military ballots can come in as late as Monday. So given how close this is, it's really hard to say how this is going to turn out.
But mail-in absentee ballots had to be postmarked by yesterday, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. So and we don't know how many, you know, we're looking at, but when the margin is this small, anything could make a difference easily.
And Tony Gonzalez, when he was behind by, you know, just a smidge, he was calling for every vote must count. And now he's ahead. It's Reyes who's going to be saying those lines. When do you think we're going to know who the winner is actually going to be? How long could that eat into the time for they would have to ramp up for a general election?
I think within a week we should have a good idea about what the vote count is. I mean, we still have to. The votes still have to be canvassed to declare an official winner, but I think within a week or so we should know. There is a mechanism. The state of Texas has this quirk where an automatic recount only happens if there's an actual tie in the vote, which is not likely to happen here. But Raul Reyes, yeah, it could happen. I mean, I guess anything's possible. And Raul Reyes, assuming he ends up finishing second when the votes are counted, I mean, he could ask for a runoff, ask for a recount, but he would, it would be something he'd have to pay for himself.
Now, looking at the overall turnout for the state of Texas, we saw about 800,000 voters participate in the Democratic primary runoff, which is twice as many, which has participated in the 2018 primary runoff, which was between, the big ticket was between Lupe Valdez and Andrew White for running for the Democratic candidate for governor. But still, that's a tremendous amount of people who participated in this runoff.
Yeah, and it's consistent with what we've seen with polling. We've seen enthusiasm on the Democratic side in Texas. We've seen Joe Biden running basically even in various polls with Donald Trump, which, as we know, a Democrat hasn't won a presidential race in Texas in 44 years. So there's definitely a feeling that there's energy. Of course, in a runoff, a lot depends, too, on what races are on the ballot, and that tends to affect excitement. I think the Hagar West race probably drove some turnout. But I think this does reflect that there's a lot of enthusiasm on the Democratic side. And kind of building on what Beto O'Rourke did in the Senate race in 2018, there's a real feeling among Democrats that something is happening.
Yeah, but this turnout, massive turnout, record turnout, happened during the pandemic.
Yeah, and that's the thing we saw, certainly in Bexar County, we saw really big numbers when it came to mail-in voting. And that's, of course, been a source of, legal battles about between the two parties.
Yeah, I'm not calling it mail-in absentee voting because people are confused. They don't understand that it's the same thing. So
just
put it together. People think it is the same thing. Yeah, so we'll see if that trend continues. So what was the big takeaway? Just you have about 30 seconds left. What do you think people should be thinking about? What lessons learned from the election runoff?
Well, I think the big lesson, I think, is that, mail-in voting, I think, is going to be a big force in November, and I think in Texas and across the country. And it could mean we might have to wait to get some results in November, but I think that a lot of people are choosing to vote by mail because they feel safer about it.
All right, Gilbert Garcia, Metro columnist for the San Antonio Express News, giving us a election recap breakdown. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
When we come back from the break, we're joined by Robert Puente, president and CEO of the San Antonio Water System. Lots of stuff going on there at Saws. The Vista Ridge water pipeline is now flowing. We've got water restrictions. How is Saws dealing with this pandemic? How it's impacting their employees and their services and people who can't pay their bills? What's happening with water rates? A lot of stuff going on. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.